It says record, right?
I'd like to call this meeting to order at 10 a.m. on April 28, 2016, Arizona State Board of Private and Post-Secondary Education. First item, we have our minutes to review. First of all, the board may go into executive session for the purpose of obtaining legal advice pursuant to ARS 38431.03A3 on any matter on the agenda. The board reserves the right to change the order of the agenda items with the exception of hearings. Okay, to start out, first of all, if Trish comes on the phone, we will approve the minutes. We don't have a quorum for the minutes until then. So I'll pass those two agenda items, the regular meeting minutes and the special meeting agenda minutes. And first item is to review a discussion of the possible action of adopting audio recordings as the official form of minutes of the board meeting. So Terry, is there any high level on that in terms of the audio recordings?
No, basically, you need to approve whether that the official minutes of the board meeting be this audio recording. There is a bill that's going through the legislature that will require it eventually. So from now on, the audio will be posted on website within a day or so. I think we have to do it within 24 hours.
It's within 3 days.
Oh, okay.
But it just must be made available within 3 days. Under the current statutory scheme, the board may adopt either the audio or written, but once that bill passes, it kind of makes written redundant. So if you'd like to save some resources and time, you can go ahead and adopt the audio as your official minutes now and begin that practice.
I make a motion to accept audio as our official minutes of the Arizona State Board for Private Post-Secondary
if
Education.
If you'd like to direct your executive director to begin that starting with today's meeting.
With direction for the executive director to begin that starting with today's meeting going forward.
Second. Any discussion?
Discussion. What happens if, for whatever reason, our audio record is incomplete? I know it's never happened to anybody else, but every once in a while, my recorder quits working in the middle of something that we don't notice.
That I am unsure of. That would be a hazard of maintaining an audio record. Between now and the time that bill passes, I believe that the agencies have been directed to upgrade their recording equipment to make sure the facilities are currently working. We are outfitted with microphones in here, but I know a lot of the agencies are trying to combine their efforts to make sure that the recording equipment is up to date. And we also have the backup recorders.
I don't think that works, does it?
No, the one in this room doesn't work.
It has 1847 in there.
So, yeah.
Well, I support the audio, and we'll vote, and we'll see how the board acts, but I would just recommend, I don't think it's better by hand, that we continue to take good notes.
I wanted to tell you that, obviously, I intend to still do that, and Rachel is as well, because, as you know, so much gets carried forward, and that's my way of keeping you chronologically updated with things going on. I will do it. You just don't have to do it as formally. Always, probably, if you ever want to see them, I'll have them, you know, with general discussion, what you told or directed the licensee or applicant to do, and so on and so forth.
That's great.
Great. Any other discussion? Call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any against?
Aye.
Great.
Trish on the
phone. Is that Trish?
Trish is sure.
Yep.
Okay. I'd like to go back on the agenda then. Trish, while you're on the phone.
That carries, right?
Yeah. Yes. I'd like to go back for approval of the February 25th regular meeting minutes. Entertain a motion to accept those.
Motion to approve the February meeting minutes.
I'll second.
Any discussion? Let's move to the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any nay? Okay, that carries. And now moving on to March 24, 2016, special meeting minutes. Can I have a motion for that?
The motion to accept minutes as published.
I'll second.
Any discussion?
Oh, were you there?
I was, on my phone.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, well then I need to amend the minutes, because I didn't have you on there.
I didn't notice that.
I'll fix that.
Okay, I'll make sure that the page...
You were on, Dr. Rada, you were on my phone. You were on my phone, and you guys were here because of the complaint committee.
Right, yes.
Okay.
So he's amending his motion?
Amending my motion that, I make a motion that we direct staff to edit the minutes to add David, Ms. Walsner on there. And once that's done, the motion is accepted.
Second. Any other discussion? No? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any nays?
Aye.
Thank you, Trish, for being there.
No problem. Sorry, I couldn't come for the rest of the meeting.
Okay.
Do you need to hang up for now?
I guess so.
Quick flyby.
Okay, the first school for regular vocational program and degree-granting license renewals, Penn Foster. Is there anyone from Penn Foster here?
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have a couple of colleagues on the phone as well. Tom Blesso, our chief financial officer, and Connie Dempsey, who's our chief accreditation licensing officer. I thought I'd take just a few minutes and give you kind of the State of the Union, and then if you have any questions.
Please do state your name for the record.
My name is Frank Britt. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Penn Foster. So thank you again for the opportunity to spend a few minutes. I was here in February last year, and we've continued to execute on our multi-year plan to reposition our enterprise and deliver more value to students. To that end, we've had three primary areas of focus. First, around outcomes and creating more value for our students, which in the context of our college includes not requiring any loans for students, so we don't accept any Title IV money, as you probably recall. The second big thrust has been around what we call the full-stack education model, which is the sort of surround sound approach we've taken for helping students achieve their best outcomes, which is a combination of technology, content, and platforms, and coaching models and alike that we find to be very compelling, particularly for the types of students that we support, and we think that is going to continue to help us create separation in the marketplace and deliver more value for our students. And the third focus is around compliance and our so-called reputational equity. We've added, for example, a general counsel to the organization with deep expertise in education. We also, in the last month, have received, we're happy to report, the DEAC reaccreditation for the next 5 years, which, as you know, in this climate, is by no means a rubber stamp effort, and we've worked on that for well over a year. We've had additions to our board, including the Deputy Secretary of Labor, Seth Harris, as well as our current chairman, who is the former Deputy Secretary of Education, Tony Miller, and those folks make sure that we have redoubled our efforts around compliance and being a good actor and taking that to a highest level. So that context of focus on outcomes, this proprietary approach to the full-stack education and an ongoing focus on compliance and reputational equity, one of the positive byproducts of that has been improved financial status for the enterprise, and that process has continued. It was most recently affirmed earlier this week, as you probably recall, when we received from PwC our unqualified or clean opinion, removal of any previous ongoing concerns in the context of an audit, and not unlike the DEAC approval. This is not a climate where those things just happen. They happen through effort and excellence and results, and we've been able to do that. So that is a very significant milestone for the company to get a clean opinion from our auditor. You'll recall that having been here multiple times in the last several years, we've had a steady story of improvement. You may recall that in November of 2014, we've received a change in ownership, which was with the Distria Group out of Chicago. And you know, since that time, sort of pre-sponsor to the present, the results have been pretty dramatic. You know, 57% reduction in our debt, 350% increase in growth in cash. But we thought for today's purposes, more relevantly, what's happened since the last time I was here, that seems like the most relevant kind of basis of comparison, so let me just highlight a few points. Our LTM EBITDA has improved since the last time I was here, 18%, from 13.4 million profit to a LTM EBITDA of 16.2. And so obviously that's a very strong indication of our steady and ongoing improvements. The second measure we thought was important was the LTM cash flow, which has improved by about 50% from 6.2 to 14.3. And as part of the transaction that we had with the Vistria Group, which was a little bit longer than 12 months ago when I was here, it was actually back in November, we had a substantial reduction in our debt obligations from 80 million to 36 million and now around 35 million. So we have a very, very healthy ratio between profit and leverage for our kind of enterprise, a little over two. And so that combination of LTM EBITDA profit, LTM cash flows that have improved dramatically, and the debt reduction puts us in the best place we've been financially in, well, certainly as long as my tenure, which has been since January of 2012, and my sense of history has been probably for quite a few years before that. And so in short, you know, we're proud of the progress we've made. We still consider it a privilege to serve the students we serve, who historically not always gotten the best opportunities. We're committed to being known as a firm that adheres to the highest standards of compliance, and our company's financial status is very strong.
Great. Real quick, the accreditation, what's the time period? That
5 years.
5 years.
Is that the maximum grant you can receive?
Yes.
What's your current ratio?
Debt to profit?
Yeah.
I think it's 2.1, I think I calculated roughly. Could sort of do the math, 16 to LTM EBITDA divided by, and it's worth noting that the debt includes $29 million of debt with payment obligations, which are certainly well within our capability set from a cash flow perspective. We also have a little over a $5 million mortgage on our property in Scranton. So the total debt is 35, but the sort of functioning debt in terms of obligations to lenders is 29. Then we have competitive, we refinanced the property in Scranton that we've been in since 1965-ish or so. A couple of years back, just because it made sense to do transactions. So the functioning debt is, you know, actually 28, 29 million.
What's your current student load?
Student load?
Yeah, how much? I mean, what's your population?
It's over 100,000. We have a high school, a career school, and a college.
Yeah.
The college has 20,000 students. The college business is growing, continues to grow modestly. So it's strong and doing well. We have we continue to ask ourselves on a regular basis, do we have programs that are aligned to the high growth occupations? And we view ourselves as one of the few institutions, at least I'm aware of, that has the full lifelong learning potential as helping you complete your high school degree, move on to certifications and or higher education. There are also a subset of students, of course, who use Penn Foster as a stepping stone in the higher education context to go to other institutions, which we view as totally consistent with our aspiration, which is to drive enhanced social outcomes. And you know, at the end of the day, we're successful if people can take their current status, build the relevant skills and credentials, and then move to the next phase of their journey. And a lot of folks in that journey realize they have much more potential, candidly, than they may have even appreciated because they didn't always have that aperture. And so we feel like we have an obligation to help them see the possible and then enable them to the best we can. And if we do that, there's plenty of people who need a lot of help, and we're happy to do so and do it in a highly affordable way, with convenience and always with the quality.
Because you stated, just so I'm clear on my thinking, you don't take Title IV funding?
Correct.
You don't participate?
We've never participated, nor do we have any plan to participate.
But you could, because you're accredited if you so desired, right?
Yes. There's both a philosophical answer to that question, which is we don't believe that people should be compelled to go into debt in order to get education. But then there's a practical aspect to it, which is the students that we service, historically speaking, and this is certainly no different than it's ever been, they don't have the same degree of freedom that some people do, and we feel like they're the best way to serve their needs, both academically and financially, is to create a value proposition, where value is quality over price, create a value proposition that allows them to opt into education and be able to afford it out of their ordinary cash flow, recognizing that in many cases they don't have a tremendous amount of cash flow. So we've made sure we've engineered all our products, if you want to call them products, to make them affordable and accessible to folks at different stages of the sort of income strata. And we're, you know, we aspire to be known as one of the leading institutions in America that serves this so-called second chance learner. Some people call them at-risk learners, we love that term, but that cohort. And so in order to satisfy the goals of helping them be successful, you need an academic model that supports them, and you need a convenience model where you wrap the school around them, not them around the school. And then to your original question, there needs to be an affordability model that allows them to do that. So in our case, the way it would work is they would typically do a down payment of maybe a couple $100s, and then we kind of reverse engineer with them that says, how much time will you be allowed to in your life to spend on school? Maybe you work, maybe you've got kids, maybe you don't work. And then we say, okay, given the fact you'll have this many hours a month to study, that means you'll be able to finish in roughly this amount of time. We kind of reverse engineer the math and say, therefore, your monthly payment will be X. And I'd say the average monthly payment might be $100, maybe a little less than that. And so that's within the capability set of the cohort we serve, which again delivers on the obligation we
and
have.
You carry all that paper, I mean, you don't do
absolutely.
That.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that affect it? Is your bad debt okay with that? Or
yeah. And we have a revenue recognition formula, which our CFO could elaborate on,
which
doesn't allow us to quote, keep the money unless they achieve academic milestones. So
wow.
We always say that even if we weren't operating with purpose, which we earnestly believe we do, if we were just, you know, temporarily economic mercenaries, okay, which we aren't, we would be obligated to deliver value to the student because we can only recognize the revenue as the student progresses and hits academic milestones.
Mm-hmm.
So we like to say, back to why we don't accept Title IV, we have perfect alignment of interest between the student achieving academic progression and outcomes and our ability to be financially successful.
Yeah, that sounds like a great model. Thank you for sharing that.
Yep.
I'm curious, what is your bad debt percentage?
It's low percentage. It's less than
it is very low.
A couple percent.
Thanks,
Steve. Yeah, based on the audit financials, you say it's just a rounding error.
Yeah, it's a rounding error. Okay. Yeah, and we also, by the way, just because you've asked, we used to have people who did, I guess you call it bad debt collections. We don't call them bad debt because these people didn't deliberately, they have life challenges,
mm-hmm.
right? So what we've done is we've actually added a team of people who are certified coaches in financial planning and financial management, and they work with the students to help them navigate their choices and their budgets of their life. We also will launch in July financial literacy program that will be free, because we feel like part of the challenge our students have, they typically aren't academic. They typically suffer from a crisis of confidence more than competence. But that said, they don't have a financial literacy to help them navigate the hard choices they have to make. And so we feel like we have an opportunity to help sort of empower them. So we'll have a free program for financial literacy, which will encourage people. If you're in such a condition where you're not meeting all your obligations, we may require you to require, quote unquote, to take that course as part of our finding a way, because our goal is to allow you to continue to do the best we can. And we spend a lot of time helping people navigate, because it's not that they don't want to pay, because they recognize that their economic mobility will be constrained if they don't get a credential. On the other hand, you know, we do have to run a going concern. And so we really work hard with, you know, well over a dozen people whose job it is to help students navigate that. And we operate with the assumption of sort of affirmation rather than you're a threat or a risk. We say, listen, you got challenges, no worries, let's work this out. And we, you know, we feel like we're pretty good at that, and that's why we have such a nominal amount of debt, considering we serve in many cases underbanked populations and at-risk populations. Mm-hmm. Compared to other institutions that service that cohort, it's not close, and it's not magic. It's just we have a high touch approach, and students believe that we have a hospitality mentality that affirms them and is earnestly trying to help them get to that next milestone.
Okay. I'm curious, you mentioned this, the financial literacy program.
Yeah.
Would that be something that would be available to non students?
Yeah, it could be. You know, we have a community capability that is a conversation place that, depending which program you're in, you get to participate in. That's open access. So if our vet tech program, we're one of the largest vet tech schools in the country, as you know. That's an open access community. If you wanted to participate, if you have a passion for that, or you might be considering that as a career, that's an open access model. In the case of financial literacy, we haven't actually thought through that. The source of the financial literacy program, because we've talked to a lot of institutions about this, is an organization called USA Funds, which you may be familiar with. USA Funds was one of the largest student loan companies in America, and when the legislation changed, they essentially went out of business, except they have hundreds of millions of dollars of ongoing revenue until the students get paid, all the loans get paid off. And so they have a financial literacy program that they're going to essentially productize, and we're going to be the first beta customer with them. USA Funds is a nonprofit organization, by the way. And so we're going to be their first beta customer using the financial literacy program, which we're expecting to be launching in June or July. To my knowledge, we're the only one that will be in this beta with them, based out of Indianapolis. And so the answer is, yeah, hopefully it can be available. I don't see why it wouldn't be. We just haven't gotten that far.
This is obviously not having nothing to do with my work on the board, but one of my passions is helping people gain financial literacy.
Right.
And a lot of those materials that were available from those sources have dried up, at least that I'm familiar with. So.
Yeah, we think that both financial literacy as well as career literacy, we have an opportunity as sort of a byproduct of the enterprise we run to help a lot of people just, we always say a mind once expanded and never contracts. We think we can help people see a much bigger set of possibilities in their life, which will certainly augment our kind of primary mission, but whether it be financial literacy or career-related mapping, we think that we have lots of opportunities, even beyond the tenure of them at Penn Foster. I mean, why can't we have a multi-year relationship with you once you finish? No reason we couldn't. Historically, we've been more narrowly oriented around, like, you intern, of course, when you finish the course, you're done. But I think we're fortunate to have scale and scope, and the needs are acute, and our brand supports that we earnestly are trying to be a purpose-driven organization, kind of a social mission company, almost more than a financial company. And so I think whether it's financial literacy, career-related stuff, we should be an open-access model, and I would imagine that financial literacy would be part of that.
Okay. I have a couple questions for you.
Yeah.
Please. Can you talk to us about You Now?
Yeah, sure. So You Now is a University Now. University Now, if you could go Google them, they're based out of San Francisco. They were an organization that was founded, a for-profit company, backed by, among other organizations, Bertelsmann, certainly one of the larger education investment companies in the world, among other things. And their premise is and was that they could essentially do a Penn Foster model for four-year colleges, which is principled on self-paced education, competency-oriented, and pay-as-you-go, okay? Like the earlier question. We observed over time, they've gone through multiple iterations, that as part of where they spent a lot of their money, tens of millions of dollars of their venture capital, they built this world-class competency-based learning platform premised on self-paced education and pay-as-you-go. The pay-as-you-go part's important because most learning management systems in the country, Blackboard, Desire to Learn, they don't contemplate the commerce part of the experience. They only assume the academic part. But in our case, those are linked in a very explicit way. And so we went to them and said, you've been at this for a while. You've built a world-class solution. But you're only able to use it for your students. That doesn't seem the best way to kind of get the value from it. Why don't you let us buy it from you? Let it be the Penn Foster platform. We'll give you perpetual license. You can use it for the rest of your existence, but let it become the new Penn Foster competency-based learning platform. And long story short, in October, we consummated that deal where we literally wrote them a check to buy that system, which is a proprietary system for us. They've been working with us over the last 6 months to integrate it. It will go live starting with our high school in June, and we will then sort of leapfrog the technology environment of Penn Foster to truly a competency-based learning platform with micro-assessments and being able to sort of decouple the curriculums into skills, which then can be repositioned the way employers want to view the world, which is they don't want to buy credentials, they want to buy skills. And so it's sort of the next generation of how the skills economy and education is going to work. We view the competency-based learning platform, previously called You Now, as the kind of anchor to that learning model. And so now we own that. We're learning how to use it from a technology perspective. And we think it will be a game changer for us over time, which will allow us to both serve our students better and also change the dialogue with employers who are increasingly also our clients because they have employees who are attending our institution. So, for example, in Banfield, which is the largest animal hospital chain in the United States, they use our vet tech program. They have 700 employees today who are going to the Penn Foster Vet Tech College program at Penn Foster. They're an example of an employer partnership to complement the traditional direct-to-consumer elements of the business. And so the long-winded answer to your question is that the YouNow platform, which is now the Penn Foster platform, which we now own all code for, it's ours, will become the anchor to that next generation of learning that we'll begin to bring to life starting in the summer. And it'll take us a year at least to fully roll it out and put new students on. And it turns out to be complicated because when you change your system, what do you do with the 100,000 students you already had? Do you approve them, or do you just put the new people in? So we've augmented our technology team very dramatically. We just hired a chief digital officer, who's back room, Bobby, who has a 25 years experience in the ed tech space, actually lives in Phoenix. And so we're augmenting our team on our tech IQ. We bought the systems, and you know, we're going to be an ed tech enabled solutions organization to power the student performance as well as over time employers.
Can you give us a brief synopsis of how the acquisition is reflected on your financial statements?
Tom Blesso can some comment on it, but think of it fundamentally as a tech. We bought a tech platform.
Right. And no, so now, no people. Asset on your balance sheet.
No people. So we just have a transition services agreement with the people, and then just becomes another asset of the Penn Foster business. Tom, do you want to augment that?
Yeah, sure. I can speak to that. It's on our balance sheet as a in the fixed assets portion as a long-lived software development asset. And you can see on the statement of cash flows in the investing cash flows, it's a pretty significant piece of our capital expenditures from 2015. We paid about $6 million in 2015 for the asset. There's also a series of milestone payments that are tied to the integration efforts because we are getting some help from the UNL engineers. So there's a $1.5 million contingent consideration liability on the balance sheet at year end as well.
And so far, all the milestones, 1, 2, and then 3 is pending. So we've hit both milestone 1 and 2, and milestone 3, which is in the June time frame, we, as of last week, assume it'll hit it.
And I'm assuming, Tom, that there is some amortization of this asset being reflected on the income statement?
Yeah, there will be once the assets are placed in service this summer when we go live.
Right. This is not really a question. You provided, in addition to your financial statements, a 5-page document, and I just want to compliment you.
Oh, thank you.
I thought it was very useful information, well put together, addressing what has happened and giving very timely information from, you know, your financial statement year closed in December, and you gave us information all the way up through March. And so very well done.
Thank you. Well, and Tom certainly deserves more credit than most for that. I think we have, in the last 12 months, gone back and done what we call a culture code, which are the 5 or 6 values that we're going to really try to be the best at in the world, and one of them is transparency. And we think in this climate, if you want to have the best reputational equity and compliance, you need to be the most transparent. And so we're trying to embrace that as best we can, and I think that's an example of trying to live to that principle. So thank you for the feedback.
Anything else? Terry, in terms of this, the surety bond that we're, we'd like to continue is 52.44.
Mm-hmm.
And from financial reporting, which way on is there a need to?
I think we can remove them from financial reporting.
Yeah.
They just, for the record, they had just been referred to the Finance Committee just for this renewal. But
right. And then it came up to here.
So.
They weren't on the court.
No.
So
they don't
a
need
referral.
You're just saying they don't need to be.
So just we're just looking for a motion to approve the regular location, and the granting license renewal with the stipulation to continue a $52,000 surety bond.
I'll second that.
Was that your motion?
I guess I was asking for a motion.
Okay. Well, I'll make that motion.
Yes, thank you.
I'll second that.
The surety bond. I'm asking the school.
Yes.
Is that okay?
That's acceptable. Thank you.
Okay, do I have a second then?
Second.
Second. Any other discussion? Missed that or
no? No, I second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. I'd just like to commend you in terms of the thinking, the thoughtfulness, and where you've come from when we first met you. So keep up the great work.
Thank you very much for the feedback. It's been a journey, but
very good.
We're going to stick with it.
Very good.
Thank you guys.
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, if for the record, I could just state that on the agenda, the regular vocational program and degree granting renewal for Arizona School of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine has been pulled because they did not yet have their audit or the strategic plan that you had requested at the prior meeting. It will hopefully be on the May 28th agenda.
I mean, I do think for the strategic plan that we should time frame on it. You know, this is a school that's had continual challenges. And we all know what they all are. I mean, I get the audit maybe, but I don't get a strategic plan. So I don't know the feeling in my fellow board members are, but I would think that we wouldn't let that go on in perpetuity, and that we would need to set a deadline for them to have that.
Well, if your direction, I will tell them it will be required, and that the renewal will be, because now the renewal, I think, has expired. Were they December?
It's so
or March, I don't know. I will tell them it will be regardless.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't think any of us that have been on the committees working with them just reflect plans that they really need to be accountable for both items.
Okay.
Pretty soon here.
Do you recall how long ago their fiscal year ended?
December. I mean, I guess I can kind of understand the audit, but
I get the audit as much. You know, you're often at the mercy of your accountants.
Especially tax time, right?
But
not at all.
But as far as the strategic plan, I mean, the school has suffered for a long time, and frankly, my concern is they're not improving.
Okay, moving on to conditional regular vocational program license renewals. The first group up was Thermostar Training Center, and the lead will be Glenn. Terry, is there any introduction?
If you want to, at your February 26, 2015 meeting, the board approved the conditional vocational program license for Thermostar with the stipulations to maintain the $15,000 surety bond, and some revisions were required. They are now seeking the renewal to go from conditional to regular for the license renewal. What is of interest is the programs are to prepare the students for careers in energy audit and inspection services, product specification, building performance, sales and installation of building performance products. Upon completion, the students can become BPI certified, and they have, and Thermostar has been approved by BPI as a test center. And again, Mr. Tharp is your board member lead, and Jerry Lawrence, right? And Gary
Morris.
Morris.
Hi, welcome.
Thanks.
Would you like to make a statement?
I'm Jerry Lawrence.
Yeah, introduce yourself.
Okay. Jerry Lawrence with Thermostar Training Center. I'm the education director.
Gary Morris with Thermostar Training Center. I'm president.
We didn't really have a statement prepared. Will be our second year. We had a conditional license granted a year ago.
Just tell me how your year went then.
Went very well. We've had about 50 students. Our courses are a week long, and they're a certification for energy auditors. We also have an infrared thermography certification, which is a three-day course. We've had one thermography class in the last year. Was our initial one. It went very well. It was three students, so small. We've done about 50 students in the energy auditor world, from Kingman to Tucson, mostly here in Phoenix. We train with workforce offices, like particularly in Kingman, and had great success at it, and just wanted to renew our license.
Yeah, so you reflect very very good retention. I mean, I guess with the shortness of the course, one would expect.
Yeah, the certifications are good for 3 years, so we're starting to get to recertify a lot of people we did 3 years ago. So we have a lot of past students calling us to hire people that get certified. The energy audit world has got a lot of job opportunities right now. It's the people that are doing the audits for APS and SRP. They have to be BPS certified to go in the homes and do those energy audits. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of demand for that right now. And so a lot of past students look to hire people or send people to us to get certified.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. A lot of these, I was your lead back when we did this, but I remember I'm getting old. So is this meant mostly, again, for people that are in the industry already in some way, some type of energy?
That's the majority of people we train. They're already in the business, and they have to be certified. Like we recently did a guy from Southern Arizona that English was his second language, and he failed the class a couple times because they just sent him to take a test. And we work one-on-one with people, and especially when English is their second language, we can test them one-on-one and take double the amount of time. BPI authorizes us to give them extra time. We can even have them bring a translator. Because the quest, unfortunately, it's a national certification body, and the test is only in English. Mm-hmm. But we can read the questions to them, because a lot of times they can speak English fairly well but not read it as well. And the questions from that agency are trick questions. Yeah, so when English is your second language, a trick question is even trickier.
Yes.
So we've had great success. We have, we used to say we had a 92% certification rate. It's bumped up a little to 93% because we've tested so many people. It doesn't move very fast, but it has gone up.
It was interesting. You put that in the catalog.
Yes.
Which is fine if you have the backup for that.
We keep a spreadsheet on everybody, and BPI won't allow us to say that number unless it's backed up.
No, nor would we.
Right. I think Terry objected to it initially.
But I don't generally see that in, but first thought I went, and then I saw you clearly, footnoted it and treated it well, so that's good. Did you do this application?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Just, that piece is good, but it wasn't complete, okay, in the sense that, and these are minor things, but we see a large volume, as you can see. Just so in the future, if you just really read the directions of what they say, and I'm talking more like the enrollment agreement, it needs to be cross-referenced. You just put the page number, but cross-reference means you actually put a 1, 2, 3 next to the box on the application. And your catalog had no state board catalog agreement, checklist with it, so that made my review very difficult.
Oh, okay.
Because I had to pull one off and do this. So that's more editorial, but you want to put us in the best mood when we review an application.
Absolutely.
And that tends to, at 11 o'clock at night, put me in a bad mood. So I just say that for you.
Okay.
And Terry knows, because unfortunately she gets my wrath because I email her. So anyway, other than that, I thought generally, this was good. I like what I see from your school. Let's see if I did have any questions. The catalog, I think you cleaned it up. Last time we had, quite a few issues that were required to get cleaned up, and those seemed to all be, I think, nothing, but just minor, again, just for public thinking. You clearly state throughout that you don't guarantee employment. But on page 4, you do say, Thermal Star is an active mentoring support program that assists students to find employment in the industry and start their own businesses, period. Everywhere else you put, but we do not guarantee employment. I just want to keep that there, because that's one thing we hear, people will come to us and say, oh, well, they promised to give me a job, or they said we're going to give me a job. And so, anyway, that's more of an editorial. I'm not certainly going to hang anything up with that, but I do that. I also have a note about 2 consecutive days missed should be dropped, but that's before I realize that your classes are a week long, so I guess you would have to have that pretty much that way. Other than that, honestly, I thought it was well good. I'm happy with your results and such, so I'll turn it over to the board members.
I am curious, what are your employment outcomes?
Employment?
96% as reported.
It's very high. We have people, past students, calling us constantly looking for more people. They don't always stick with the jobs. Not everybody works out. We partnered with Friendly House, which is a sub-grantee of the City of Phoenix Workforce. And at one point, they called and said, everybody you've trained is employed. Do you have any new people? So it's been very high. And only since we started the license process last year, we started to try to pay more attention to it and really keep track. And now that we're working with more grant workforce people, we're trying to help them with their compliance reporting and keep better track of it ourselves.
Two of the students in the last class got hired in the class. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay.
Yeah. Continues to be a hot area of employment.
And what does a new graduate have the potential to make?
We're trying to get better studies on that. It's home performance is all practically a new profession almost. It's sort of a sideline to HVAC companies, and there are home performance only companies now that don't do HVAC. They do these audits and maybe contract out some of the different retrofit work, but we are seeing salaries from 32,000 to 100 plus. And ONET is starting to track energy auditor salaries, and if they're on the sales side where they get commissions, that's where they get the top end, but they can make $15 to $20 an hour at the beginning. And sometimes some of the jobs start out as piecework, contractor type work, and develop into full employment, which the workforce people like much better, and we're trying to push the companies to be more like that.
Anything else?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman. I therefore make a motion to approve the conditional to regular vocational program license for Thermal Star Training Center with the following stipulation that you maintain a $15,000 surety bond.
Do you approve the $15,000?
Absolutely. In fact, I got the renewal notice yesterday. It expires in July, and we paid it, and we'll have a new bond to send to Terry once they issue it.
Good. Any second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any dissent? The ayes have it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next up, your Seven Centers Yoga, and Craig will be your lead. Terry, Ms. Stanfield.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board. At your January 2015 meeting, the State Board approved a conditional vocational program license for Seven Centers Yoga Arts with the stipulations to maintain the $15,000 surety bond and to make some revisions to their enrollment agreements. Seven Centers is now seeking renewal of the conditional to regular vocational license. And just as a note, and we don't know as of yet, HB 2613, which is still retained on the Cal calendar, which has the yoga exemptions.
Now where is that now?
It's gone through the House and the Senate. Now it's sitting on the Cal calendar, I think, and it was retained. But there is still the potential that it could have a floor amendment, go get scheduled back on the Cal calendar, make some amendments to at least get that through. I don't know. Okay. I haven't heard anything. So we're kind of in a holding pattern on renewals and, well, not really. We're doing it, but we're just kind of
going. Thank you.
And here representing the institution is Ruth Hartog.
Craig, and Craig is the lead on this one?
Yes, hi. Welcome, Ms. Harton. And can you state your name and your position with the school?
Yes, I'm the director of Seven Centers Yoga Arts, and it's a yoga teacher training school.
Okay, very good. How has the school been doing since licensure?
Actually, we've been doing better since licensure, and I don't know that it has anything to do with the license, but one thing that I had done over the last 2 years is I run immersion programs, 30-day programs, mm-hmm. and there are gaps between that, so 4 or 5 times a year. And what I've instituted were weekend format programs, and that's ended up financially tying all the pieces together so that there's a regular income as opposed to just dropping sums of money here and there. So that really has fully come on board in this last year, and that's working out really well.
Okay. I'm curious, what have your enrollments been like this past year?
Well, in general, you know, what I've put into my application is what the, you know, number is, because
right.
it changes from seasonally and, but in general, we had 80 people that were graduated from our programs, our certificate programs, in this last year, so.
Okay. Any challenges? Have you had any challenges with finding staff or instructors?
Yes, but not for any lack of people that are available.
Okay.
For more philosophical and personal preferences than anything.
And has that affected your operations at all? With staffing issues at all?
Not really.
Okay.
Only in the sense that I work more than I usually work. So I think you perhaps can understand that when
right.
you are
any
in charge of anything, you just take on more.
Right.
So that's the only way.
So what lessons have you learned so far?
Since the licensing?
Yeah, running your school.
What I would say, and this is something, Casey Miller was the one who overviewed this application last year, and she's involved in this, you know, in this world that we are in. And one of the things I would say is, and this pertains to the legislature and the law that is pending and exempting these programs, I felt that the licensing process was beneficial for me in certain regards. It absolutely forced me into putting on paper what I do and the organizational aspects of it, and then presenting it to other people. People were able to see organizationally what was going on. And so I feel like that was absolutely the best part of the licensing. There are parts of the application that don't apply to what it is that I do, so I was continually trying to figure out how to answer questions in certain ways. The other thing is that we're a really relatively small operation in terms of numbers and graduates, and so the fees of CPA and all of the time that it took were pretty expensive. So one of the things that I had in conversation with Casey talked about this year,
mm-hmm.
and just personally between us, was that some type of an amended application for teacher training licensing program, teacher training programs, I feel would be the best of both worlds, where I'm concerned about the lack of regulation in this area.
Sure.
And what it means for people coming into trainings. So anyway, this was by, you know, this is the good part, and then the part that was challenging were the parts that didn't match in terms of this.
Okay. Well, that's very good feedback. We appreciate that. And I really appreciate the level of intricacy we had to make you go through, and that you, I think it really helps school operators to understand that more than anything, we're a consumer protection agency, and the safeguards we want to put in to make sure students are well taken care of at schools and that there's no problem. So,
well, and I will tell you, originally when I was looking at this licensing, I saw it more as an income creator, perhaps for the state or whatever. And when I went through the process, I realized so much work goes into this, and so much work goes into the application, that there's no way that this is an income creator for the state. And that it really did have a focal point of consumer protection. And also, I think even though you're not addressing curriculum or matters of, for example, you would not understand my curriculum, I would guess, if you didn't understand my world. But the organization and having to put it together, I feel, goes a long way in cleaning up problems around curriculum and syllabi that are required as a part of this process. And so I feel that those that do go through the process are upgraded in terms of who they are, how they present, their professionalism, etc., through the licensing process. And so I would be an advocate for some portion of that going on in
okay.
this world.
All right. And interesting that you talked about that we don't know your curriculum. I do have a question about, there was a stipulation when you got your conditional vocational license to The Kundalini enrollment agreement, you were asked to revise it so that both the 65 and 135 hour modules into one agreement. Was that done?
Yes.
Okay.
Very good.
You did read it. You did. Okay, yes.
Well, all right. Okay, that's all the questions I have.
Any other questions?
Yeah, you lost me at Kundalini.
I don't have a question, but I do have a compliment. Your financial materials that you submitted were very detailed, and that made it easy to follow and understand. I don't have any concerns based on these financial statements, but they don't have to be quite that detailed.
Okay.
Now, I don't think that's going to save you any money with your CPA. So, and I'm not telling you that you shouldn't make them that detailed. All I'm saying is, he could summarize some of those categories into instead of multiple line items, put them in just the one. But he did a very good job.
Thank you.
And, made my part of the review easier.
Great.
And I appreciate it.
Great.
Thank you. Any other questions?
If I could just make a comment.
Yes.
First off, thank you very much for the feedback on the importance or the advantage of licensure. I appreciate that because we've heard a lot of how awful it is. So we very much appreciate it, but also we did get an amendment if our bill goes through that if the yoga schools wish to maintain licensure, you can.
Okay.
What is unfortunate is that almost all of the licensees had no idea of the rule revisions that we had done, reducing the requirement that made it so expensive for the financial statements and the liability insurance. So,
great.
But we will be, once it's all fleshed out, we'll be contacting them to let them know one way or the other and their options if they so choose.
Thank you.
Okay, well then I will make a motion to approve conditional to regular vocational program licensing renewal for Seven Center Yoga Arts with the stipulation that the $15,000 surety bond is maintained.
Second.
With that second, do you agree with the $15,000 surety bond?
Yes.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Passes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Next up, condition to provisional degree granting license renewal, Cummings Graduate Institute of Behavioral Studies. Sam Hill would like to introduce.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Cummings Graduate Institute for Behavioral Health is seeking renewal of their 2016 conditional to provisional degree granting license renewal. Cummings has been on quarterly reporting, more of a debt due to our vacancies. The Finance Committee was unable to meet in March and did not have a chance to make a recommendation to the board. Cummings is seeking accreditation through DEAC instead of HLC as previously done. And also to note that this last week I forwarded to you notification that they have changed from a for-profit to 501c3. Dr. Rada is lead on other matters of the renewal, and Mr. Walzer is focusing on financials. And here representing the institution is Dr. Kara English. Brett Sabatini is on the phone. Dr. Cummings is on the phone. And I'm sorry.
I'm Jessica Kimbrough, Director of Policy and Compliance.
And I'm Amy Burkett. I'm the Operations Director.
Excellent. Why don't you start out a little bit of sort of your story here over the last year in terms of where you are and your plans forward. There's sort of a lot in here in terms of where you are. I'd just like to hear your perspective on that.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we have made remarkable progress in the past year. We feel like we have just absolutely hit every single milestone that we had for our year. We've moved through our phases of development, and at every step of the way, we've had students at our focus, and improving their experience throughout the process has been something that we've taken great joy in seeing come to life. We've been surveying them all along the way to make sure that they're happy and to see where we can make improvements. A couple of those improvements that we have focused on are areas of our organizational structure and just, you know, bringing a better operations in terms of our personnel. So we've invested there. We've brought a great deal of investment to our product. So learning to really manage our learning management system and our online learning environment, and just the, you know, the technology involved in an online school, a fully online doctoral program, as well as we've learned some lessons with our student information system, so that moving forward we know a lot more about that process and how that integration works. So from a technological perspective, we've learned a lot in the past year. We've done a lot of research and development just in higher education and running a school in general. One of our huge milestones was we recently attended the DEAC conference in April in Washington, D.C. Myself and Jessica attended and just were able to meet many of the senior leadership of many of the other DEAC accredited schools. We have several really important contacts that we are able to get in touch with as we move forward. Bringing Amy and Jessica to our operations has been an enormous assistance to us. As you know, when we applied for our conditional license, we were all educators and clinicians. And so really learning the game of higher education was a huge learning curve for us. And so bringing two people with excellent experience to the table has been a dramatic assistance to us. Also, just financially speaking, we really feel like we've made leaps and gains. We've moved from a structure where we were, you know, taking donations from a charitable organization to transitioning to a not-for-profit, which really meets our mission, vision, and values, and allows us to move forward to really continue to meet the marketplace need without having to, you know, continuously seek a tuition balance in our finances. So we've just made a lot of progress, and we're really proud of where we're going. We have a lot of excitement about the future. We have some really exciting business partnerships in industry. We're looking at workforce development partnerships as well, and you know, sort of trying to wrap our minds around the competency-based education and how we can move in that direction, but also continue to offer such a high-level advanced degree. So we're looking at a lot of different exciting developments.
So let me start here, because maybe this is a basic piece, some things about accreditation process. But right now, as I read this, there's been 9 students, 8 faculty, 7 administrators. So, I mean, how long with this run rate is that possible to afford the staff, the faculty serving 9 students?
That is not at all our goal moving forward.
What I remember as we sat here, you know, maybe like a year ago, and that was a little bit of concern of the board, is your projection was to, I think, 40 or 50 students.
Right.
And, you know, it is a big undertaking, and I hear you. Now that has come to realization that it is. The concept is one thing, the educational goals is one thing, but, you know, how do you attract enough students to make this so that it's an ongoing, a sustainable enterprise?
Right.
Which is ultimately for the students. So can you speak very specifically about what's your goal over the next year in terms of the number of students you need to be able to pay your bills?
Yes, absolutely, we can do that. In our original enrollment, we enrolled 10 students right off the bat, and many or most of those were transfer students from, you know, previous university where they wanted to continue or finish their program with us. And then 5 of those students graduated in December, and so we moved forward with 4 continuing enrollment students. at that time, we really were facing this financial, you know, question of how are we going to sustain. And we knew that we wanted to move forward to convert to a 501c3, and so we began that process. And at the same time, we really took a look at where we were at financially and what could we do at that time that was the most important, the biggest priority for us. So again, you know, based on the recommendation of Casey Miller at our last meeting, we, you know, took a look at EMIS and really looked at our organization, our operational structure, and determined what personnel we needed to bring to the table. And again, that is where we invested with our policy and compliance officer and Amy with director of operations. And we looked at our product. So what we needed to do to build that so that the degree program was stable, so that our curriculum and our faculty and our students were stable. So we did that, and then during the process of conversion to 501c3, we really looked at, okay, where are we going to go next in our phase two of development? And really what that looks like is moving forward, we're going to, now that we're a 501c3 and we're fully funded, we can reinvest in marketing. We can reinvest in bringing an admissions and enrollment counselor to the table, and we can reinvest in another personnel. We're going to bring in an assistant director of finance on board, so that those are student-facing individuals who can be working with them to bring them on board, even though it's still another year before we can even apply for DEAC accreditation, and then some time to take, you know, undertake that process before we get Title IV. So in that time period, what we're looking at doing is being able to reduce tuition so that we, again, it's kind of back to listening to Penn Foster speak, it's a lot of that, you know, idea about being able to make tuition affordable to the average person with a master's degree. So a behavioral health master's degree, you know, you're looking at a population who's, you know, making around $60,000 a year. And so to be able to make tuition affordable for that population, what does that tuition structure need to look like so that an average person can invest in higher education while still working full time? So we've looked at what that tuition structure needs to look like. We have made some proposals to our board of directors, and they're you know, looking at that. They're going to be making their approval sometime within the next week. But what we're really looking to do is to be able to say to our target audience here in Arizona as well as outside Arizona, here's what we can do to make tuition affordable for you, and at the same time allow you to graduate with no debt. And that's another, you know, that's a big part of who we want to be as a 501c3. So, you know, moving forward, what we hope is that we'll be able, with our investments in marketing and, you know, our financial director, as well as our ability to reduce tuition and make it more affordable for students, because really our tuition before was not affordable without, you know, Title IV loans. So to be able to make it more affordable so that they can move forward. So as to the specific number of students, we would be looking at 45 students to cover just our base. And that's, you know, 45 students taking two courses per session every session. And that's about what our average student takes. Some, you know, will take three per session, but we really don't recommend it. It's, you know, especially for a full-time working student, to be taking two or more courses per session is about all that they can do and really get the quality out of it that they deserve. And so we need 45 students, and we're looking at fall, our projected enrollment, with reinvesting in marketing and reinvesting in an admissions counselor. We're updating our website to make it more user-friendly, to make it easier for students to access the information that they need about our program. We believe that our goal for fall is 20 new students. And then as we move forward into the spring one, spring two semester, we believe we can bring an additional 20 students on board. So we're hoping to meet our 45 students, if not more, based on that affordable tuition rate, and have students graduate without having debt.
Ask question. So is it your opinion that the lack of students interested in the program, is it because of the pricing, or is it because of inefficient marketing,
it's
or demand
neither,
of the program?
Actually. So our initial conversations, and you know, I was the admissions counselor as well as the director, and so I spoke with every single lead that came to us. We were getting on average about 75 leads a month. So we had a huge, huge number of interested students. Every single conversation ended with, I cannot afford to come. I would do anything to come, but I cannot afford to come without loans. And it dead-ended our conversation right there. You know, so we looked at different kinds of financial partnerships. We've, you know, spoken with banks and financial and credit unions. And at the end of the day, what we really realized was, as we transitioned to a not-for-profit, we are able to meet our mission, vision, and values by lowering our tuition, by making it more affordable for students, and by getting our students in the door so that they can go out into the world and meet our mission, vision, and values without debt.
And your current tuition is, and what will, what are you proposing to be after?
Our current tuition is $650 a credit hour, so it's $1,950 per 3-credit course.
Okay.
Okay, so you're looking at $4,000, you know, and divide that into a monthly, you know, payment over the course of 3 months. It's not something that most families can afford. And so our proposal is for a $350 per credit hour. We've benchmarked other institutions, and again, that was a big part of us going to a DEAC conference in Washington, D.C., being able to look at what are other online institutions doing at the doctoral level to, you know, again, be able to make that value proposition by bringing that value of a doctoral degree. But, you know, instead of a $35,100 program with $350 per credit hour, we can take it down to $2,100, and, you know, it's a $700 a month payment, which is still... it's still a lot for a lot of families, but it's much, much more affordable than our current rate.
So this form
balance sheet
that you put together.
Yep.
Down the by the way, your projections are much closer than to your actual results than we originally saw.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if it ever comes about that your projections and your actually coincide,
mm-hmm.
then you're doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's a guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's your best guess. And but student breaking a point,
mm-hmm.
Almost 200 students is what you're saying.
Right.
You need. Your testimony is that you need 45.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, can you help me close that gap?
Right, and this is the balance sheet that would have come to you would have been based on our current tuition.
Sure.
And so based on the new tuition, we're looking at, you know, fewer students to be able to make our monthly burn rate, essentially. So we did our break-even analysis. We're looking at about 134 students based on our ops expense. Our course break-even point is about 22, so it's higher than 45. I think we were looking at just for the fall semester, that 45 was our goal for the fall semester alone. So, you know, on an annual basis.
Right, and
far
and
more.
You're starting out, and the expectation, it'd be wonderful if you, mm-hmm. you got more than your break-even point.
Sure.
You know, tomorrow, but mm-hmm. that's not going to happen. So you're trying to ramp up and build the structure. We understand that. But what you're saying is that it's going to take much closer to what this number is.
Correct.
To be. Now, is it realistic based on the kind of the structure you're putting together that you can handle 200 students
mm-hmm.
at a time?
I would say absolutely. That's one of the beauties of having a superb online learning environment. You know, currently we have our courses built so that whether it's one student or 30 students in each of our courses, that, you know, students and faculty can easily interact with one another. We have excellent instructional design. It's absolutely ready to go. You know, and having come from Arizona State University, I you know, taught courses that had students 30 or more students in them, sometimes 41 students in them, and I can say that whether you have, you know, 30 to 41 students or five, you know, absolutely the structure that we've built in the online learning environment is top notch.
Okay.
Yeah.
One last question.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, the institution was being financed by the Bank of Cummings.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you're a not-for-profit,
mm-hmm.
how are we going to be financing these deficits going forward?
I'll let Brett Sabatini speak to that. He's our CFO, and you know, he can tell you, he can get into the details with you on that.
Okay.
At the current time, we, with the audited financial statements you have in front of you, as of 12/31, we had debt of $900,000. The Cummings family has agreed to do an interest-free loan until we have a positive cash flow within the institute. So at this point, it's being deferred. Moving forward, under the 501c3, the Cummings also have committed through their foundation, the Cummings Foundation for Behavioral Health, have committed $241,000 a quarter to help move the school forward and continue to see it reach its goals and its mission, vision, and values.
Okay. since the Cummings related foundations are such an integral part of this school's ability to survive, I think that we ought to strongly consider having the financial information about the foundations be part of this on an ongoing basis, simply because right now, you know, the school does not have the assets and the resources necessary, but does have a promise from a very closely related founding, you know, funding source to be able to go on. The question is, to what extent is it reasonable to expect that that funding source can't meet that obligation? I could promise you to pay $200,000 a quarter, and you would not be able to cash that check. Not because I wouldn't want you to be able to cash a check, simply because I don't have the ability to make good on that promise. And I'm confident that the foundation does have that, but I think that ought to be part of your submission going forward. Does that make sense?
Sure. And I think Brett was trying to share something.
Yeah, not a problem. How would you like that to be presented? On a separate financial statement? Or I don't see a problem with that. I just don't understand how you'd like to have that integrated.
Well, since they are two separate entities and we have a promise to pay, I would just simply provide the financial statements for the foundation itself separately, so we can see that there is the wherewithal to make good on that promise.
Okay. No, not a problem. We'll go ahead and submit that with the next financial review meeting.
Anyone else? Please take what I'm going to say with, and my voice is deep, and sometimes when I speak, people think I'm giving an admonition or something like that. I know your programs. I know the care and the heart you have in terms of what you're teaching your students. But the obligation here to students to come up with an economic model, because whether you're for-profit or not-for-profit, and I sit on not-for-profit boards, they've done so for decades. The first thing we have to look at is that we have enough money coming in to pay our staff to be able to care for the clients or students or whatever. But you have to be very clear on those numbers. If it's 45 in the fall or 20 and 20 and it's 135, that's what you need to make this happen has to be very clear. Mm-hmm. All the goodwill and knowledge and education is and passion is really good. Mm-hmm. So please, please consider that deeply in terms of running this. And I hear you. I hear you very clearly. You have learned a lot in 1 year.
Mm-hmm. We have.
Right? And this is going to be a pivotal year. Mm-hmm. This is going to be really pivotal. So please take that with the way I am trying to suggest it.
Thank you. Yes, we've absolutely taken every single nugget of advice that the board has given us and are very grateful for all of it. Terry's been absolutely wonderful answering our questions, and you know everything that we've taken from these meetings has been very helpful. So we're absolutely going to continue to do that.
Okay, I would like to make a motion to approve the conditional to provisional degree granting license renewal with the stipulations that $100,000 surety bond be maintained and to continue quarterly financial reporting.
And
do I have a second?
And to include the
and to include
Cummings Foundation.
The Cummings Foundation
financials.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Is that I would like to ask the school the commitment in terms of the $100,000 surety bond and the Cummings financials?
Yes.
Yes.
We agree.
Yes. No problem there.
Okay.
Thank you, Director.
Okay. Any other discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Any nays? Okay. Very good. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Terry.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Okay. Okay, next we have regular degree granting license application for a call center only for Western Governors. Terry, would you like to introduce, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. WGU is seeking a regular degree granting license to operate an administrative office, national enrollment call center in Arizona. No other educational activities will be taking place. In the application, it was explained that the call center has been in operation since 2008. In 2015, WGU sent Mr. Blanchard the letter of intent to operate in Arizona, which is our very first step in the process. In Dr. Cavalli's letter, he explained that they've been here in Phoenix for some time, however, no face-to-face instruction is offered from the physical location. Regarding SARA, Utah is not an approved NC SARA state. However, it really doesn't matter because there's a physical presence here with the call center anyway. So here representing the institution is Dr. Lucas Cavalli and Tyson Heath. Which one's which?
Lucas Kaplan.
Tyson Heath. And your board member lead is Dr. Rada.
You can just give us a quick overview.
Absolutely. I came into my position in October of last year, and one of the very first things that I did as Associate Provost for Compliance and Accreditation was do a institutional audit to see where we were approved, what the documentation was of those approvals, etc. The approval letter for Arizona that was given to me was the one from 2011, which stated that we were approved based on having no physical presence. And I said, I don't think that's sufficient, and confirmed with Mr. Blanchard that, yes, that was insufficient for the present operations that we had, and immediately started the process toward obtaining the license, which brings us to where we are today.
I have nothing else because of, I don't know if there's any other questions, because in my mind I read this, it's really a physical call center location, so I have some ideas to make a motion, but is there any other?
You know, I would hate to disappoint the institution without a question, maybe. But I don't have
to. Read us on
that. Ow.
So I think as we've ruled on this in similar situations, we're asking for proposing a consent agreement in terms of the regular granting license, but a consent agreement to approve with a civil penalty of $1,000 for the violation of the ARS 323053.
Understood, sir.
So
I second that.
Any other discussion? Or okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
By the way, your binder and everything you put together is very well done.
Thank you.
Mr. Heath.
It's a what?
Never saw.
Okay, next. Conditional non-accredited vocational program applications, advanced business learning, and Craig is the board lead. Ms. Spanfield, would you please introduce?
I guess, Mr. Chair, members of the board, advanced business learning is seeking a non-accredited vocational program license to offer an IT and project management program. They have the $15,000 surety bond. Mr. Blanchard has done the required site visit. And they're representing the institution is Tom Jenkins, and I'll let the other ladies introduce themselves. And again, Mr. Jacob is lead.
Good morning. Thank you for being here. Would you please state your name and your positions?
I'm Tom Jenkins. I'm president and CEO of Advanced Business Learning and 51% owner of the firm.
I'm Janet Young, and in this role, I'm the academic advisor and senior leading consultant.
I'm Dr. Cynthia Banton, and I'm academic advisor and senior learning consultant.
Okay, well, thank you. Your report was very thorough. It's a very good report. But I will say, just like Glenn said on the other report, you did not include a checklist for the enrollment or catalog. I didn't see it in there. Maybe I missed it.
That's required by statute, but it's just not.
It's required. It's in there.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I guess they just. On your tabs, I was looking for it right in front, and I didn't see it. But
I want to say it's tab.
You have the enrollment agreement, and then
we did have these memorized at one time. So,
your
tab what tab
it is? It was. I'm sorry. It's tab 11.
There we go.
2012.
That's all the way back here.
Okay, here, yeah.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so the checklist is literally at the back of...
Oh, it's in the back.
Yeah,
you just missed it.
I know it. Sorry.
So, okay.
We thought about putting the tab on. I should have put
it on. I don't want to challenge you, but Six Sigma certified people...
I know. Yes. Oh, no, a defect.
Oh, and before we move too far, Marta Druffman should be on the phone as well, and she's our finance manager for Advanced Business Learning.
Marta, are you on?
She fell asleep.
She said she's going to put it on mute and keep working until we call her.
Probably is.
Uh-oh.
All right.
Give her a call.
Well, please tell us about your enterprise here and why you think this school will be successful.
Certainly. Advanced Business Learning has been in business for just over 17 years. We are a state of Arizona organization. We are a GSA certified organization as well and a veteran-owned small business. We have 17 years experience in the training and development world and learning solution providers to Fortune 50, Fortune 100, Fortune 500 organizations around the world. And over the last year, well, let me back up. So our clients have been typically the large Fortune organizations or emerging organizations such as eBay when they came out years ago. We worked with them exclusively. Our clients are typically companies like Microsoft, Allstate, AIG, Waste Management, Avnet Electronics, J-Bill, and the list goes on and on. We got involved in the GSA approximately 5 years ago. We picked up clients with the U.S. Navy Recruiting Command, Bureau of Land Management here in town at their training center, Pacific Northwest National Lab, and the list goes on from there as well. And we did an awful lot of conversion of material where we take their existing material and turn it into e-learning competency, e-learning based material at various levels of complexity. And Navy Recruiting Command, we restructured their entire recruiting methodology worldwide for 5,000 recruiters with a three-dimensional approach from enlisted learning, officer learning, enlisted officer and specialty positions. So we understand learning and development, and we then started to get more and more involved with cybersecurity online training. And we were approached by, and it's on our GSA schedule, and we were approached by the Defense Intelligence Agency. And it's interesting getting a call from an intelligence agency. And they asked us if we would consider working with them on cybersecurity training for DoD mandated 8570. Requirements, we of course said yes. We worked out a contract with them, and for the last year and a half, we have been providing DoD certification-based cyber training to approximately 180 of their staff. We do it with instructor-led, online self-paced, and online live. That got us into the U.S. Navy, where we now have a new contract with Navy Facilities Command, and as we speak today, we're running classes for cybersecurity training at the Naval Yard in DC, and we will we have three more online now, in line now, and they have a waiting list for our classes as well. That brought us to a point where we were talking to various organizations here in the state, and we met with Patricia Wallace at the Workforce Connections Board. We met with Bruce Liggett at the DES. We met with Steve Kutry at Supervisor of Second District, and all of that got things moving where people said, you know, the Maricopa County environment is looking at developing a center of cyber excellence approach, and they have universities that they can work with, and they have colleges they can work with. What they're really lacking is somebody to work in the area of a certification-based approach, vocational school, if you will. That got us introduced to Tri-Advocates here in town, which is a political consulting firm. We worked with them a little bit. They had us down to the state senate to provide testimony for certification-based training in Arizona. That got us in front of Sierra Vista in Cochise County, where they also would like to have a regional approach to a cybersecurity excellence type environment, where they have a university, they have a college as well, and they would like us to come down and open an office there and support them in the area and Fort Huachuca as well to be the certification-based cybersecurity center. That got us in front of Fort Huachuca. Colonel Boone is the garrison commander there. We have meetings set up with him to continue the conversation around providing certification-based training to the folks on Fort Huachuca. What makes us different is that we took sort of a, for lack of a better term, I'll call it a Southwest Airlines approach to it. There's a lot of organizations out there that provide cybersecurity training. The prices are all over the board. As an example, there are organizations here in town, and in the state rather, if you were to take Certified Ethical Hacker, it could cost you $3,885. I want the margin on that business. We offer it at $2,885, and we provide it to the Navy right now for, it'll be $2,450 per student, and we still make a very good margin. So why do we want to do this? We're being asked by Maricopa County and Cochise County to do it. We're being asked by the military to please come in and make things more affordable. Sequestration is certainly hurting them. They want to be able to put more people through classroom environments. They want to manage their budgets more effectively. We have on board the Navy Southwest Region, who wants to put people into our programs, and the Admiral, we've already met with him and his staff there. We've met with Luke Air Force Base out at the Transition Center, out at Luke Air Force Base. They are on board. They want to put people through training programs of ours. And then, of course, we have Fort Huachuca. The only thing we're missing right now as a former Marine is I want to go down to Yuma and get the Marines on board, and we'll make that happen. Now, all of that comes together as an organizational structure with a pure intent to provide the training on cybersecurity around the initiative. The country needs it. We know that. The state needs it. We know that. And we're looking at it as saying, okay, how can we pay forward and provide an environment where we're doing this where economically it makes sense? We'll still make money, but we don't need to be making 70 and 80% margins. So we can do it at a lower cost and still support the infrastructure with people like Janet and Cindy, who both have huge, well, American Express, Global Change Initiative, Six Sigma. Cindy managed Motorola University, big parts of that for years. We've got a finance person who definitely understands the government side of financing, and we're now stepping into the DCAA compliance for work around that area. So as an organization, we feel we're very well set up to support this, move it forward, market it. We have all the contacts in place, and we have existing business to support the ongoing organization. Now, I could talk for another half an hour,
Can I add one thing?
Of course.
In addition to the government entity of this, we also support private industry, corporations. There's a huge backlog of cybersecurity jobs that need to be filled, so we will be doing outreach and partnering in that area as well.
And so the natural progression was to offer these certificate programs to the public. It sounds like military transitioning out to civilian to get them educated. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Different.
In fact, some of the credit unions here in town, we've already been on the phone with them. We have a waiting list with credit unions to start putting credit union peoples into the cybersecurity classes here.
Yeah, and how long does this certification program take?
1 week.
5 days.
Five days.
It's called a boot camp. The DOD requests 5 days. They don't want it to be longer than that. Can we do it longer than that? Yes, we can. We can roll it out longer. But right now, every one of them is 5 days, including the project management course.
And I will say, well, first of all, in regards to the curriculum, who developed this curriculum?
The curriculum has been developed by independent vendors, intellectual property owners. So these are CompTIA, ISC Squared, ISACA, EC Council, and Project Management Institute. And we are an authorized provider to all those organizations. Well, to most of them. To one of them, we will be once, assuming you gentlemen grant us the license. They only grant licenses to schools. So we are an authorized training provider to those organizations. And those are the standards around the globe for cybersecurity training. Every major corporation, every major government agency, every major defense agency puts their people through these courses to be certified in A+, Security+, Network+, on and on it goes.
And our particular curriculum was developed based on the need of the students and the jobs that were in demand as well.
Okay, so I will say some of your programs for a 5-day program, they do have quite a bit of material to cover. Mm-hmm. Any comments on that?
Industry standard.
Okay.
Now that's the glib answer. That's a short answer.
Right.
So the real answer is something else that differentiates us is that we have instructors that when they get up in front of the classroom, these are instructors who have years and years and years experience working in, our instructors, mostly the federal government space, including the military. So when they stand up there and say, I'm Tom Jenkins and I'm the instructor for the next 5 days, and oh, by the way, I worked at NSA, I worked at the CIA, I worked at the Defense Intelligence Agency, I worked at the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines, I have a secret clearance or top secret clearance, and I've been doing this for 10 years, and now I'm going to explain it to you. Tends to take away any concern that we have, excuse me, professors, but a scholastic approach and methodology only, that this is real-world application. We have so far, and we meet the industry standard of a 96% pass rate on certification exams.
Excellent. Yeah. And I think that's one of the key points, is that these are certification preparation programs, so it is a very concentrated, and the goal is that they would be able to pass the industry-recognized certifications that a lot of corporations and government entities require.
And we're adaptable in that approach also. I mean, as we speak now, we have a class going on at the Naval Yards in D.C. for Security Plus. The U.S. Navy put 15 people in the room. They mandated they be there. And we are now finding from the instructor that there are some people in the room who maybe don't have as much experience in IT as we would like. It's not a requirement, but we do recommend they have 2 years. So if they don't, they can still take the prep class. That's up to the Navy. But what we do then is being very flexible with our instructors. Our instructors know that if they have a group in the room that are not as experienced as they would like, that they are to slow down, they are to make sure they understand it, they are to stay late. This is not an 8-to-5 job. Stay late, set up the tutorials in the evening, make sure people understand it, review the next morning, keep that process going for 5 days so that when they take the exam, they're going to be okay. And
so someone doesn't have to have any computer experience, and they can expect to be able to pass the certification?
For the low-level courses, yes. A plus, Security Plus, Network Plus is questionable, but those first couple, yeah.
And what Cindy and I's role is that as we have these students, and again, a lot of what we're doing is because we're working with organizations like the Fort Huachuca, is, you know, we'll be sitting down with them to kind of help assess that says, you know, you have X amount of experience, and so let's think about maybe a path. Because they could take one course or they could take all 21. But we'll, you know, help to kind of coach them on that. And the advantage, I think, because of our audience that we are pursuing, which is the transitioning military, we also have an assessment in terms of their experience. And many of these have got phenomenal experience in cybersecurity, but what the certification, what we're helping to do is help translate that then to the civilian world.
Mm-hmm. So I did notice on your organizational structure, you don't have a title of a chief academician or provost. You have the academic advisors. Do you feel like that'll be sufficient to deal with any kind of student issues with academics, to as far as any grievances or problems? Or
yeah, we actually have two roles that we've kind of allocated to be for grievances and also for support
the director
for the
students. Of operations.
The director of operations, yes. And then we also have Marta, who's also our student services. Okay. And so we have, in terms of the processes that we've put in place, that those individuals will be the key contact individuals for the students. And then we also are, because we have experience in this, we are designing a learning management system and a database that will even help us so that we have the background and touch points with the students. So we have even planned in terms of the life cycle of the students, even though it's only five days. You know, it's kind of like we still want, I heard one of the other presenters say high touch. Mm-hmm. And so we do have, as part of the database, is that we will be sending out, you know, emails. How's it going? Did you get your certification? How's the learning going? So, yes.
Yeah, so we will consider it a failure if realistically, we'll consider it a failure if at the end of the 5 days we lose touch with those people.
Yeah.
We're business owners. These are seeds. Those seeds are out there and growing, and they're going to other organizations. And we want to be able to be their new best friend when they go into the other organizations. And we want follow-on courses, and just as we're doing with the Defense Intelligence Agency, in the second year, we're now tracking the people who went through in the first year and making sure all their annual maintenance and their certifications are up to speed and identifying which courses they now need next to keep moving forward. So it's a repeatable process over a given period of time.
Okay, I just have a couple more questions, particularly to your submission. In Section 2, on page 4, your projected enrollments, 1,180 in the second year, 1,320. How did you come up with those?
projections? Well, some of it was, as Mr. Walzer said earlier, that they are projections.
Okay.
We're looking at this. But what we did do is we sat down and we said, okay, you know, we've run classes around the world for the last 17 years. So we know how to work with organization, and excuse the phrase, to get butts in seats. We know how to get attendance inside an organization in the classroom. So we looked at it and we said, okay, that's fine. But what have we been doing for the last year and a half? How much business did we do with the DIA? All right, DIA was they're not one of the bigger organizations in the intelligence community, and we put something close to 180 people through in a year. We have the Navy now involved. It does help that one of our advisors on the team is a retired two-star admiral, Admiral Ham Talent. He is very involved with what we're doing. No mistake how we got into the Admiral's office in the Southwest region. They know each other. He got us in the door. So when we look at the volume of people that the Navy put through over the last couple of years through DOD 8570, we're looking at it saying, hey, we'll take 2-3%. We'd be happy. Now add on the Army, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, the intelligence communities, let alone here in town, Colonel Boone told me the other day that there are approaching 500,000 active duty Army personnel at Fort Huachuca, and that is their second highest concentration of Army intelligence, communication, and cybersecurity personnel and cryptologists in the country. That is about to be increased. The relationship between Fort Gordon and Atlanta, which is the number one location, they are growing so quickly that they are now moving a lot of their cybersecurity and cryptology people and communication people over to Fort Huachuca, so those numbers are just going to go up as well. Now, added to that, now we're just focusing on military right now, added to that is existing conversations we've had with Northern Arizona University. We've met with their management people. They have accelerated programs that they would very much like to start steering their people through to come into our cyber programs or certification programs as they're coming out of the accelerated programs at NAU. We also have discussions going with Maricopa Corporate College, same scenario. Cochise College, same scenario. I was at what's called an ACSEA. It's a Armed Forces Association meeting yesterday where I was one of the speakers. And a gentleman was there from Arizona State University. He's very interested that we follow up next week and sit down and talk to them because they have people that we look. So by the time we looked at all of these stovepipes and just started applying very conservative numbers, that's what we came up with.
And the workforce development work we've been doing. One of the other things is, as Cindy was mentioning, we are focusing, one of our audiences is the military, but yes, we also, as part of our organization, we have Steve from the Workforce Development.
Steve Troxel is the chairman of the Workforce Development Board in Maricopa County.
And so he's been working with us to apply for the eligible training provider list, so that we can then also offer WIO funding to incumbents or, you know, at risk. What's nice is the veterans that are transitioning are considered at risk. And so they're very much, right. they get up on the list on that. And so we're finding, especially in the Fort Huachuca area and the Sierra Vista area, that they actually want to work with us in partnership to see about what we could do to secure some funding. So that's sort of our next strategy to get approved for the ETPL.
Okay. So I went to your website, and that's your current website that you use for your corporate customers, and that's the same website you're going to be using for. It's not, because on there it said something about site coming soon. And it sounds like you're getting calls from individuals about wanting to enroll. What's going on? How are you handling that right now?
Let's take the first part. The website upon. Knock on wood, acceptance of a license, the website needs to reflect that much more strongly. The cybersecurity work we've been doing over the last year and a quarter has been very nice business, but not a real branded product of ours up until now. With the acceleration we see coming, it's time to now go back, revisit the website, make it more license driven, make it more cyber driven, make it more 8570 driven, ETPL requires that we have a landing page, a portal for landing as well, so that'll be incorporated into it. We've had a number of people call us recently from the Armed Forces where they found us on the website or found us on our GSA schedule, and they want to engage, and we're sitting there going, okay, you know, the website's okay, but if that's what's going to be happening, if people are going to be making decisions representing large groups of people, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, then we need that website to be much more tuned, and that's what we're doing right now.
Okay. I just have one other question. I was looking through your program course study forms. The hacking program,
mm-hmm.
The book really cost $865.
It really does.
Wow.
Yeah. It really
Most
does.
Of your books were like between 60
yeah.
and 200.
Yeah. Yeah. Certified Ethical Hacker is the most expensive course that you
I
can take.
I didn't know
right
if
now.
That was a typo or
no.
I don't think. No defects. Yeah, and again, we also, those are the exact prices that the industry recognized agencies governing charge. So there's no, we don't add anything to it. It's a straight, and it becomes the product for the student so that they have that and that it's always their product. So,
okay.
Yeah.
That's all the questions I have.
Anyone else?
No, not really.
Okay.
I just... commend you. It sounds like a good model.
Yeah.
As a former Navy corpsman.
Oh. Hey, Marines love our corpsmen.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
I appreciate what you're doing. Good presentation.
Okay, right. With that, I'll make the motion to approve the conditional vocational program license application for advanced business learning with the stipulation that a $15,000 surety bond is maintained.
Second.
In terms of the surety bond, is a note here. Is there something in terms of it based on the student count or something increasing in quarterly reporting? There was a sort of comment on that, or is it just right now the 15 and we're good to go?
That was just based upon the projections that we felt that was warranted. Yeah, obviously, you'll see them back in a year to see if
the
net projections and how things are going. So,
okay, good.
Just throw it out there as an option.
With that clarity. All in favor? Are you
in
agreement for the $15,000 surety bond?
The answer is yes.
Good. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any nays? The ayes have it. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank
thank you.
You
for the time.
Gary, thank you. Keith, thank you.
Thank you.
Gary,
thank you. Thanks, Gary.
Last but not least, the conditional vocational program application, Warrior to Inspector. Glenn will be the lead, and Terry, do you have some introductions?
Warrior to Inspector, War to In, is seeking a non-accredited vocational program license to offer a non-destructive testing and welding inspection program, referred to as NDT. I haven't figured this out and learned about it. It is difficult. So, you know what? I'll leave it at that, and I'll let Mr. Green explain it to you. He is on the phone. He had prior out-of-town commitment, so he could not be on the phone. And Tammy Green is also on the phone. And your board member lead is Mr. Stark.
Hi.
Okay.
Would you like to make a statement? Please introduce yourself for the record, and if you'd like to make any statement, tell us about the school.
Okay, my name is Kenny Green, lead instructor and founder of Warrior to Inspector.
And I'm Tammy Green, the director of finance for Workland.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about
First of all, I'd like to...
Go ahead.
Okay.
No, go ahead. Just...
Kenny, if you could make an opening statement, explain why you are wishing to do this, a little bit more what the program is. So it's a program we haven't seen in the past.
Okay. First, I'd like to thank the board and reiterate the thank you for your time in this process and how valuable this process has been to establishing the foundation for our program moving forward. Non-destructive testing. Most people are familiar with laboratory testing. You take a product, you destroy the product, in the process you get material properties of strength and whatnot. So non-destructive testing would test products for they're fit for service, and in the process, there's no damage to the product. The product stays in use. So that's the general understanding of non-destructive testing. That is the core of our training curriculum. Quality control, quality assurance, inspection would use non-destructive test methods in an overall inspection program. So warrior to inspector, what makes our model proprietary is putting in one package all of the mandates that are mandated through our industry, the American Society of Non-Destructive Testing, and those mandates are in ANSI CP189 in the form of formal training mandated hours, field training mandated hours, on-the-job experience, and as well as testing for certification in general exams, specific exams, and practical exams. So our program would include recruiting people into the industry, and our primary target is the military transitioning into a civilian career. Then we would go through all the mandated training hours for formal training, and they would we target eight qualification categories, and those are magnetic particle testing, liquid dye penetrant testing, ultrasonic thickness testing, ultrasonic shear wave testing, phased array ultrasonic testing, time of flight diffraction, certified welding inspector, certified high strength bolting inspector, and structural steel welding inspector. So with those eight categories being taught, and they would have qualifications and opportunity to certify in those categories. So the field training mandated hours are about 85% of the mandated hours in CP189, and this is what makes our program proprietary. The other programs don't give you the opportunity for the field training, and through a network of job site access, we allow the students the opportunity to first take their formal training classroom skills, apply them in a simulated environment at the school, in-house, and then the City of Flagstaff just approved us to have an outdoor facility, and the outdoor facility would be an extension of a structured OJT facility is what we have proposed, so they could then go into an environment where they need to have full PPE, personal protective equipment, and they're working in that environment in the weather, outdoors, and applying those technologies before they go on to the job site. So when they arrive on the job site, they're very versed in what they're going to be doing. They're versed in the environment, in the components they're testing, the methods and techniques, the procedures they'll use, and the equipment they'll use. So that gets them through the ANSI standards and mandated requirements for formal training, field training, and on-the-job training. Our third semester would then focus on their future employer. Their future employer would dictate third semester curriculum. So that curriculum would be specifically built for that employer, and those industry standards that employer is working with, the components that their employees are testing, the codes they work with, the specifications and procedures they work with, acceptance standards they work with, and the equipment they work with right down to the model number. So when those students arrive for an employment, the onboarding process is greatly reduced by that employer. For that employer, that employee now is revenue producing often months in advance. I think we can eventually nullify the need for the 90-day probationary period. So the time period that we would have as a third semester student, a portion of that time would be spent on site with their future employer as these arrangements are put in place. So by the time they actually show up, They know their foreman, their supervisors. They've been on the floor. They've worked with their equipment and their products, and they have a period to do that at Worksman at our facility, and their learning extends onto the job site, and potentially that they eventually be working as an employee. So from the time we recruit out of the military until we fill the role of the corporate recruiter on the recruiting employee side, the entire process becomes unique in our industry. This does not yet exist, and therefore we feel that model is proprietary. We feel like we have a value proposition to the veteran, although it's not exclusive. It's available as well as civilians. The step that we would seek upon receipt of licensure with the board here would be the ability for the veterans to use GI Bill funding that they've already earned in application toward tuition. So that would be our next step in our process, and that's our plan for the future. So that kind of gives you an overall view of how they're introduced into our program and how they integrate into employment. Obviously, there's no guarantee of employment, but I have no desire to graduate as a student without providing them the opportunity for employment.
Right. Thank you for that overview. Again, this is sort of a niche area that you know, not all that familiar with. I'd start off by saying that your application was very well put together and properly cross-referenced, so thank you for that. It made the review a little bit more pleasurable. As a veteran, as I stated earlier, I'm always concerned that, you know, schools that, you know, identify their target audience as veterans, you know, that they, you know, are playing by the rules, that they don't, you know, try to perceive that you have some type of agreement with the government, which I thought you did a good job of not doing that. But do you have plans, or you've been trying to get GSA approved or work directly, I don't know if you heard the last school, but talking about with the military?
Yes, but from my understanding with the SAA, state approving agency, this license would be prerequisite to that approval. So we have
No, you're talking that's two
plan.
Sorry to interrupt you, but you're talking that's GI, state approving authority approves you for GI Bill. That's I got that you want to do that, but I'm saying that as a being an authorized vendor with the government where you could actually do, like work on the base or recruit, you know, work a little more closely. I just didn't know. It's not necessary. I just didn't know if that's your plan. I guess, well, let me just sum it up this way. So not to, I think it looks good, and I understand. My concerns are, it is a niche. How are you going to market this? How are you going to get this out? And your price, quite frankly, $31,700 is expensive for not having any type of financial payment plan, any type of loans, any type of other things. And I really have to question, you know, before the GI Bill ever gets out, how are you going to make a go at this? Because you do have expenses and such that you're going to have to cover.
Yeah.
So if you could address that.
Right now, the situation that we're in, as we go through the three-semester program, you'll acquire certifications. A couple during your first semester, four during your second semester, et cetera, et cetera. The outside of the GI Bill, that would be very difficult to answer your question. So we are working and just looking into student loan opportunities. I've got some meetings with credit unions, but that has not come to fruition yet. So we do not have a solid plan on that. We have a solid plan to move forward into researching and development in that area. But we do not have an opportunity for student loan this time.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at some third-party vendors. It doesn't have to be Title IV funding, but, you know, that's something for you. You also, in your elevator speech, kind of discussed, you know, working with employers. Have you done any outreach to them to see if you can pick up any direct training contracts to train their people, perhaps?
Yes, sir, and we have done that. So on contract basis, where licensure is not required, that is our penalty right now, 2 days. So we have had opportunity to train personnel for the purpose of taking certification exams that had less than 50% success rate. We've had 100% success rate with our students recently, and on the project that I'm at, similar situation. So we are test training on contract. That's what has been supporting us through this process up to date.
When you say 100% of your students have passed their certification, how large a population is that?
That was a group of 7 students that came through courses to go prep for an exam that was being administered by Pacific Gas and Electric. And so all 7 of those passed that test. And they said that no company had done better than 50% to date prior to that.
Okay. That's an excellent result. One of the things of your model is when they get to the third semester, it's supposed to be tailored towards their future employer.
Yes.
And do you in that the Flagstaff area have enough demand for this kind of training that there are that many employers that you can make those arrangements with, or is it the expectation that each student will have already prearranged their future employment conditional upon passing your test? How's that going to work?
So it's more nationwide and nationally that market would come from. It's not necessarily Flagstaff. We have one customer that's engaged with us, and they're wanting to do workforce training of their own employees. So that market won't specifically be from Flagstaff. We've got customers in Oklahoma, in Texas, in Salt Lake City. So they are coming nationwide to our facility for the uniqueness of our facility and the unique opportunity that we offer the industry. That was quite a consideration to be in Flagstaff. If our draw was so unique, and so far proven that hasn't been a hurdle. And you can imagine sometimes just that jump flight from Phoenix to Flagstaff can be quite an obstacle sometimes. So far they've been willing to make travel to Flagstaff for that training, but the customers are going to be on a national level. Because it's such a niche market.
How are you recruiting, though? I mean, your application is very unclear to me about how you're actually going to obtain students to keep the school open. Even as far as I go back and I look at your, which is supposed to be the marketing tab, which says media, and it really just shows, there's one copy of, I take it as the landing page of your website. It doesn't say anything. I wonder, you don't have anybody identified, at least per the catalog, as an admissions person or a recruiter or somebody who's going to be working with this. So
they have it in the financials.
Yeah.
$50,000 for.
So do you have? It's not listed in the catalog. Somebody that's recruiting. Who? So do you have somebody? So can you tell me? I guess what I'm trying to get at is, how do you plan on recruiting, obtaining students?
Okay, so right now our website
is Brian's
only being used for inquiries. And these inquiries are coming from a recruiter, military recruiter in the Marine Corps, Brian Scoggins. And so his intention is to work full time for us. He decided to re-enlist. He thought until this is all put together that he would be more effective in remaining in the Marine Corps. So right now it is really restrained intentionally because of waiting for licensing, and we have discussed the GSA approval that you had mentioned, So these things we're waiting for licensing to put into place so that we don't want to oversell when we're not ready. So Brian Scoggins would be our recruiter. He is sending two people to our website. And so we're not soliciting anyone yet. When they go to our website and they request that we contact them, there's a contact inquiry page. That's the only point in time that we are contacting people. So it is limited right now. The plan is GSA approval. The plan is Brian Scoggins would be a full-time recruiter. And then he would also shift over to the outbound and work as a corporate recruiter, not just an inbound recruiter for the school, but now a corporate recruiter to help align students with potential employers. So this is the vision that we have, and intentionally it's been restrained, waiting for us to go through the process.
It needs to be, because as you know, you're not licensed, you can't legally recruit right now, but I was looking for more of a plan because it wasn't, I didn't get the great articulation out of that thing. So, and I did see, and I apologize for that oversight, that you do list Brian Scoggins as your recruiter. But you said he's active duty? How does that work? He's supposed to be recruiting for the Marines and he's kind of sending people over to you instead, or how's that working?
Well, he was a Marine Corps recruiter.
He's not currently. Okay.
No. So he is, yes, sir. So as he is aware of people that are coming out and transitioning, trying to transition into civilian, he is just discussing the program and the potential. And so we do have a waiting list developing, and we've actually kind of, as a pilot program, we've taken on a couple students at no cost to go through the program, and I've got students at the end of their first semester, and that's why I'm out here in Louisiana. I'm transitioning a student into employment, and I'm working here side by side. So after one semester, this student's at $33 an hour. And then he would come back for further training. And at the end of the second semester, this company requested myself and one other. After second semester, he'll come back to the same employer at $50 an hour. And that would be later, the end of September of this year. And in that third semester, he would have advanced technology certifications. The potential for those that could have with this employer have him at a rate of about 65 an hour. So that's the scenario that we see playing out, but just working through the process and working the kinks out so that we are ready when we hit the market.
Okay. David, do you for financials?
I just have a few questions about the financials. You provided us with some projections of what the company is going to do, hopefully, in 2016 and 2017. You also provided a letter saying that you're committing to using your personal resources, you and your bride, to support this school. So I have some questions about your personal financials.
Okay.
Where are you employed?
I am working at the school full-time, and I am doing contract instruction, contract training, and contract inspection. So one of the legs of our format is field training and job site access. So I'm basically fulfilling the role of one of the job site access mentoring inspectors. So that's why I'm out here. As a mentoring inspector, I'm helping a student transition into this industry who has now two certifications. So as that, the job that I'm on is paying me while I'm here. And while I'm here, I'm also mentoring that inspector to succeed without me. So that mentoring inspection position is a paid inspection role. So that's how I'm being funded now, personally.
Okay. And the reason I'm asking that is, it sounds, well, it's not, it doesn't sound. We are, in essence, double counting. Because you're saying your personal resources are going to support the school. And personal resources you list, the primary personal resource available to support the school, is your salary, which is being paid by the school.
Well, no, the salary is being paid by inspection contract. So I guess I would say if it's paid by the school is doing contract training. So companies came to me, can you prepare our guys for this test? So in that sense, if the school has the training contract, and I was paid personally by the school, but the school is making a profit off of that training. Now, in this role as a mentoring field inspector, we're on projects where each inspector, the student being one of the inspectors, are being paid. So now that the student is in a role where they're actually being paid in that scenario as well.
Okay. At least I understand better. Okay. I don't have any further questions. I think this is a real cool idea, and I hope it really works out for you. I could see the need for this kind of training and how your model could be a good answer if you can get all those pieces together. There's a certain amount of skepticism you may have heard by members of the board because there just seems to be an awful lot of things that have to come together. And those things are going to have dollar signs associated with them in terms of their costs. And I don't, you know, it'll be difficult. But I don't know if it's possible.
All right. Yeah. Again, this is Glenn Tharp, the lead, and I'm prepared for a motion. But I think it was never my intent to sound negative. I share Mr. Walter's comments with. I think this is a good idea. My issue is coming from 20 plus years running schools and knowing the dollar amounts that it takes. And quite frankly, I would be lying if I didn't say I'm concerned about how you have a lease already and you have all this stuff, and this is really contingent on a lot of things going together. And I haven't read the state approving authority regularly, but it used to be you had to be in business for 2 years before you could even apply for that. And I think that's correct. So I just really hope you think about that, how you're going to obtain students, how they're going to pay for this and all those things. With that, I'll make a motion to that we approve the conditional vocational license program for Warrior to Inspector, and with the stipulation that you maintain the $15,000 surety bond.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? And just to confirm with the owner, the surety bond, do you agree to the surety bond of $15,000?
Yes, we do.
Yes, sir.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any nays? You guys have it? Okay. Thank you very much, and good luck.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you,
Kenny
and
Tammy. Thanks for all your hard work.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too, Ben.
Now we'd like to make a call to the public. Public input is encouraged. Presentation must be limited to 5 minutes. Please be aware, however, that the board may not discuss, consider, or take action at this meeting on any item not appearing on the agenda during the meeting. Additional public comment may be requested, but is generally not allowed.
Any comments from the public? Anyone on the phone? So moved. Now we move to board business. Executive Director, Ms. Stanfield.
Yes, unless you have any other questions regarding my report, I'll give you a brief update on the legislation that our continuation bill, which does include the exemption. It's not an exemption. It changes in our licensure section that those in the section on exemption can seek licensure if applied.
That's 2371
or 26130? That's 2371. That's okay. The board's bill. Yeah. It was amended in the House, then went to the Senate. It was amended in the Senate, so I had to go back to the House. They've concurred, and now it's kind of sitting there because they're working on the budget, and now it has taken precedent over other bills going forward. Once the budget is passed, I will assume that it will continue to go through and be signed.
Okay.
2613 is the new yoga exemption bill. There was one just 2590, but it got a strike. Everything was everything else, I think. So the yoga moved to 2613, which included exemptions from various other regulatory agencies, like the Board of Technical Registration, and the industry members were not happy with it. So there's been a lot of contention on that bill. It was retained on the Cal calendar back at the beginning of April. Once things start moving, it could get forward. Who knows what's going to happen? So other than that, we've had a few closures, but nothing dramatic. Would you like me to proceed with rules?
Sure.
They passed. Oh my gosh. They finally went through, actually they were on the consent agenda at the April 5th GERC meeting. So that was quite, I was in and out in 5 minutes. So, but we had to answer a bunch of the questions of staff and myself and our role writer adequately addressed it. So it's approved, it's been published and registered, and it will go into effect 60 days, so that's June 5th. It'll go into effect. So, I don't think I've updated the website. Yeah, I need to do that. Then, when they're in, we'll put in the clean copy. Now we've just got the marked up copy. Regarding our new staff, I'd like to introduce to you Rachel Howell. She's a new administrative assistant.
Hello.
She has replaced Carmen, who retired after 25 plus years.
You really retired this time?
This time, yeah, I really said, okay. Okay, I'll quit calling you back. And of course, I introduced you last month, Kevin. So, Kim is still with us, but she is out on family business.
Well, just to, you know, comment to all us. I know a lot of people worked on the rule of business system back one item.
8 years.
I mean, just, you know, thank you for everyone, all the hours and time. And I know there was a tremendous amount of work that people put into that. So.
And unfortunately, it was a lot of hard work from Jason.
Yeah.
It was.
A lot of hard work from Jason and Casey and Trish, you know, and David in financial areas, and Casey in terms of the marketing, and I mean, we all did, everybody did a lot of work over a long period of time. So.
Except for me, David, and Hank,
right? I'm not saying it,
we didn't need to part it
out. No, David did. Great.
It was financial stuff that I was involved with, which is, of course, always a pure pleasure. So.
Just a pure pleasure.
Yeah.
Well, you saw the litany of items that we put in there that we can review, which I think was really good. It gives more specific criteria for our review.
Where are we, or do we have any idea where we are in terms of fully staffing the board?
My apologies. I wanted to do that. Ugh, I'm an idiot. Here in the audit is Ms. Catherine Niemiec, and earlier, she's president of Phoenix Institute of Herbal Medicine. She has applied to represent the vocational seat. Dr. Paul Mettman, who was sitting in the front and has to leave, he's president of Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine and has applied. So we're just waiting. I don't know. If the governor's office would approve, would make the nomination, it's obviously not obviously. I guess it's a possibility it could get scheduled for Senate review, but highly doubtful. So my thought process is they're busy on the budget, so they're waiting until session's over, then they'll make appointments, and then they can start serving, and then get Senate appointed next year. But both of them were here to observe you.
They may now
change their mind.
Withdraw their application.
Run for the hills.
So do you have any sense, we hit a meeting or two ago that you thought they were, this current government legislator would want to, what are you doing? Go ahead. So I'm just wondering if you know about renewals of that. So.
Because
mine's coming up in 17 again, so we don't have another term. So I just got to know if I'm planning on going to greener pastures, which won't break my heart.
Yes, I'm fine with that.
Are there greener pastures?
I miss you all.
2017, that's next year.
Yes,
it is.
I think it's through next year, I believe, is what I thought.
What I have seen as patterns, not the right
way. I think it's 17 off.
It could very well be because there were 2 years. Jason and Casey were a year ago, and then we had a break for 2 years, then we lose two or three up, that reappointments aren't necessarily being made.
Okay, that changes.
Not that, I guess my argument to them and to the policy advisor is, it's not like we have, first of all, you guys rock. Second of all, it's not like there's a large pool of available licensees fitting the specific areas.
Yeah, the specific specialties.
That are going to be willing and able to do the amount of work and time involved in this. So,
sure.
What I'm saying is, I'm going to fight real hard.
Sounds good. Thank you.
There are, fortunately, there are plenty of CPAs.
not with the academic acumen that you have.
No way.
You can't go away because when we get to financials, we go.
David.
Follow his lead 100% of the time on that.
Well, we, depending upon whether if the appointments are made, the ability of the finance committee to meet in June is kind of up in the air.
Okay. Do we need to take any action, or did we take it while I wasn't here about having our officers?
We did. Special meeting. That's the one you were on the phone on.
Did I?
Yes.
Oh, I forgot. We voted Trish.
Trish. Trish.
So I took complaint back because Trish, yes. I had turned over my chairmanship to Trish, but then she took on this, so yes. Then I looked back to take and complain.
So the complaint committee stands with Lynn as chair, Trish as a member, Craig, Dr. Roddick as alternate, and you're the sole member of the finance. So we can hope and pray one of these two will be able to
have a good background to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anything else? Any other business before the order? Okay, I'd like to adjourn. 12:21.
Good job, Hank.